Hello and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am the Stoic Edward.
Oh, and I am Andrea, and I am not conservative. I do have the giggles, though.
You do.
I do. But he is, Edward is, my favorite conservative.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Now, we are not live today because we're traveling again. We do have actual jobs, so that's why we're not here live. But we are recording a show for you a couple days in advance because it's a topic we feel very strongly about, both of us, that we're on the same page about. And one that we feel will have a huge impact on the upcoming presidential election.
Yeah, you are correct, as always. You want me to repeat that?
No, just speak up.
You are correct, as always.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, I missed that part. Okay, what are we talking about?
We're going to talk about illegal immigration, more specifically about how to return all the illegals to their home countries.
Okay, so I thought, I don't know if this is a Biden thing or not, but I thought all illegals that we've let in get to stay here until their quote-unquote asylum court date.
Well, technically, no.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But because according to the UN, their charter on claiming asylum,
right,
you must claim asylum in the closest safe, air quote, country to the country that you're leaving.
So, okay, so what is that? How does that impact the U.S.?
Well, let's look at our borders.
Okay.
We have, on our borders, Mexico.
Yes.
Canada. And the only other country that is closest to us with nobody even closer is the Bahamas.
So okay. You're saying that Mexicans, Canadians, I don't know why Canadians Bahamians. Would, but, and Bahamians?
Bahamians.
Bahamians yes. Mm-hmm. Can claim legal asylum in the U.S.?
They can't, because we would be the safest first country, closest to them.
What about Cuba?
Cuba, actually, I actually had to look this up, but no, Jamaica is actually a few miles closer to Cuba.
Hear that? So Cubans go to Jamaica.
Yeah, go to Jamaica. Yeah.
But that's not the reality. That's not what's happening.
It's not, unfortunately. But the law says that this is the way you claim asylum.
Okay, so anybody
that showed up at our borders and said, Asylum, that they just know that word, right? Because that's been passed around.
Yes.
Well, unless you are from Mexico, you should be immediately denied.
So. Or Bahamas. Or
the Bahamas or Canada. Yeah. Right. We got a lot of Canadians coming down.
Yeah. So many.
So I don't blame them, by the way.
Let's talk numbers and different scenarios, because I know you put a lot of thought in this.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to have in our show a link to our good friend Andrea Widberg over at The American Thinker. She's a great writer, as reference to some of these stats that
we
have out
there. Show notes. Yes.
Yeah. But I think the first thing we need to do is change the wording, because words mean things. Words are importante.
As a writer, you know, yes. I agree with you.
Yeah, you're a writer. Words
fucking
actually
matter.
Mean things. Yes. So, shockingly, they do. And what I am really pushing is we don't want this to be about deporting, deportation of illegals. We're not. We're repatriating them to their countries.
Okay.
So we need to repatriate, because they are patriots from where they once came.
Okay.
And that is the proper term that we should use.
Have we ever done this in our past?
We have indeed. I mean, what's fascinating is, back in 1954, which would have been in the Eisenhower administration, we had what was very politically incorrect, Operation Wetback.
It was actually called that?
Called Operation Wetback.
Whoa, okay.
We sent back over 1 million illegals back to Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, Mexicans. But what was interesting is Mexico was actually wanting them back. They wanted to work with us on this program because
we really need that.
Well, they were losing so much money
from
these workers leaving, and they wanted them back. So, you know, the actual Hispanic population at that time in 1954 was only 9 million people.
Wow.
Today it's about 80 or 90 million people.
Right.
So yeah, it's a huge percentage of what was of the Hispanic population that was actually sent back. So yeah, it's quite interesting.
Okay, so that was 1954.
Yeah.
Are there any countries today that are doing a similar thing? Hopefully it's not called Operation Wetback, but any other countries doing repatriation?
Yeah, I mean, Pakistan right now, or as Obama would say, Pakistan, they are actually deporting millions of Afghanis, I guess you call them, back to Afghanistan. They can't handle them. They're tired of the unrest that they're bringing, and they're not mixing very well with the actual local community. So they are in the process of literally sending back
immigrants. So people are doing this, and they can't be the only country doing this.
On a large scale basis, probably, yeah. But, you know, our country, for all the whining and complaining, we have the most liberal laws of immigration. Than any country in the world.
And we've talked about Australia on a previous episode. Far.
Yeah. Yes. So,
So if we did this repatriation today, how do we go about doing this?
Well, you know, I'm sure I don't have at my fingertips the laws that are currently on the books that we could use. Leave that for the lawyers, because lawyers got a lawyer, right? But I'm sure a President Trump would be happy to use executive orders.
Okay.
Since Mr. Biden has kind of set the record for how many executive orders you can use. So,
right.
You know, unfortunately, the Dems will go full lawfare on them, on him, which is lawfare is just think warfare, just with the law, which is what they're doing to him now,
right,
of trying to break him with every lawsuit you can imagine. And they're trying to do that to anybody who supports him. They will go full lawfare on this thing. Now, whether his executive orders can supersede that, I don't know, but okay. We have to have a plan.
It's okay. So I do want to ask you about, and I don't know who dubbed this term, anchor babies, but and most countries don't allow this, but in the U.S., if you have a child born here in the U.S., it allows you as the, I don't know if it's both parents, but definitely the mother of the child to claim asylum, stay in the U.S. because you have an anchor baby. And so, and I know other countries do not permit this, many other Western countries and that are otherwise similar to the U.S. So what do we do about illegals coming to the U.S. with the sole purpose of having a baby so they can stay?
Yeah, well, first off, we need some political will because we have to change. I can't remember what amendment it is to the Constitution, what number it is, but it was originally put in the Constitution as an amendment because of slavery, that people were brought here against their will
as slaves,
and they should have been allowed to stay with their babies being automatic American citizens. Okay, that's how this came about. This is not people who invaded your country. And somehow we need to get that change. That has to be
changed. So what could we do? I mean, I know you have some ideas about what can we do with the anchor babies.
And unfortunately, you go to any big city now and you're going to see little 4'8" women, right? They're all about the height, right? All from Central, South, Mexico, Middle America.
Tend to be shorter, and I'm on the shorter side as well. So continue.
You are seeing them fully pregnant right now. They are having babies like you cannot believe.
Right, because they'll allow them to stay here. So what do we do about that?
So what do we do? Well, I would propose, these are my proposals here that hopefully RNC can take up.
All right.
But they can leave them here with a legal family member. They themselves would have to go back.
Okay.
They can put them up for adoption if they so choose, which obviously you don't want that. But if that's the only way that they decide that that's the best life for their child, then they should do that, because we have many, many, many couples who are waiting years to adopt children. And they got to go to China and everything else. So, or they can take them back with them.
Yeah.
And at any point during this child's life, they can come back to the U.S., whether if they find a family member or a sponsor that wants to have them here, they can. And when that child turns 18, they would legally have the right to bring their family members back
in. Oh, yeah, that's a great point.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point. Okay.
But, you know, and that to me would prove that you're willing to wait this time and not try to abuse the system, that you are willing to put in the hard work that it takes to.
I don't know if they're abusing the system because it is a law in our books. You know, they're taking advantage of it, but I don't know if it's abuse. But
I think it's a combination
there. Okay. So. Well, I have two examples that I want to cite, and I'm changing the names of people. So one is, this is a former girlfriend of a friend of mine. We'll call her Pam. Very interesting young lady, very intelligent. Lives and was raised in Tijuana and actually worked for a company based out of San Diego. And for those of you who don't know geography, that's a pretty short trip from Tijuana to San Diego. It's right across the border. Now, it was very interesting because of the company she worked for and the health insurance she had. She did go to San Diego to have her child. She wanted her her child to be born an American citizen. However, she herself had no desire to move to America. And it's kind of interesting because it falls in line with this policy you're suggesting. She went back to Tijuana with her child, is raising her daughter there. But her whole point was she wanted her daughter to have the opportunities. So her daughter can come to the U.S. at any time. And if I had to guess, she probably is going to send her daughter to college in the U.S. But it's interesting because if you think back, she sort of could have been an anchor baby. But no, her whole purpose was my daughter's an American citizen and I'm able to do this, but I am raising her in Tijuana. So that is totally legal what she did. And then I know on the flip side, when I worked at a research study at UCLA, I remember this one woman, I'll call her Mara. She was so, so delightful, but she was here in the US illegally. And I didn't know until it came up in conversation that she brought her son over illegally. And so he wasn't. Her second son was born in the US. And so she had one son who was completely illegal and one son who was an American citizen. And when her mother died and she went back to Mexico, she really feared getting back. And this was during George W. Bush era. She feared getting back in the U.S. But the whole time I knew this woman for 3 years, I kept thinking, what are you going to do about your older son? What are you going to do? He's not legal. He wasn't born here. He's not an anchor baby. He doesn't have a social security number. What are you going to do about him? And of course, I couldn't ask her that, but it just boggled my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing easy about this at all.
No.
I mean, it's, ripping families apart. And that's the whole where leadership's going to come in, where you have to have the cojones to take the slings and arrows that are going to be shot at you. Yeah.
But I do like this idea, before we get into other immigration policy recommendations, I do like this idea that if you come here illegally and you're pregnant, here are your options. Leave your child with legal family, give your child up for adoption, go back to your country of origin, and like Pam, the example I gave, and then your child can come to America whenever he or she chooses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really like that. All right. So let's talk about some policy recommendations that if President Trump is elected, he could do right now.
Okay. First day in office.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And remember, he's only going to be a dictator for one day.
Oh, okay. Please don't put that.
Get that
God,
started.
God. Okay.
Right?
All right. Come on.
So, all right. To me, my whole thought process on this is obviously you have to build a wall, right? But you have to turn them away at the border.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is no, let's ship them into the country, give them 10 years or 7 years or 5 years court date down the road and expect them to come back up. We, in fact, have them come. They apply at the border for their asylum.
Okay.
You then turn them around at our expense. We will fly them home. We will put them on buses home. We will pay for this. And then they will be given a court date in the future and they can come back at that point, but they cannot be put ahead of anybody who's already in line going for legal status.
Okay.
Going about it the proper way, I should say.
Okay.
That is applying through our embassies and all that stuff. But they have to wait their time in line in their home country or their next safest country to them if they are truly politically persecuted.
Okay.
You can, and that's one thing we need to talk about. Threat of gangs and stuff is not asylum. True asylum, and the only way that the UN recognizes it is if you are afraid for your life of political persecution.
Right.
It cannot be because you live in an unsafe area.
There are a lot of unsafe areas in the US.
A lot of in the world is a dangerous place.
Okay. I am the play-by-play person.
All right.
So you left them some points out here.
Yeah.
What happens if instead of waiting for their court date, they come back a second time?
Well, this is one of the things that a way to identify people besides fingerprints is DNA. And we were giving DNA tests at the border.
Okay.
Until Biden decided not to do so.
Okay, because, but that doesn't answer my question.
Right. But my point is, so if they try to return illegally during that time and we can check their DNA that says, boom, you've already tried, blah, 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 they're immediately sent back and they are banned from ever applying again.
Okay.
There's no second chances.
I want to recap your policy points.
Please do.
For any policymakers who are listening. Mm-hmm. And like you said, have the balls to actually do it. Future President Trump, perhaps. Who the fuck knows anymore? So number one, turn them away at the border.
Correct.
Number two, at our cost, we would fly or bus them back to their home.
Correct.
Free of charge. We pay for it as citizens. Three, give them a court date in the future, but it can't be ahead of anyone going through legal channels.
Correct.
Four, they can return for their court date. Mm-hmm. Five, if that DNA policy is reinstated, and if they are caught a second time to re-entering the U.S. because we do have their DNA on file, they're banned for life.
Amen.
All right.
Just 100%.
I have to say, we don't agree on many things. But I agree, and I am a little bit more of an isolationist for sure, because I think we need to take care of Americans first. I think this is an amazing policy.
Well, what I find fascinating, and it's an anecdotal example, is right before we came on air,
yeah,
I got a text from your father.
Oh, are you going to share it?
No.
Okay.
I don't have it, but I'll paraphrase it. But your father is left of center, shall
Absolutely.
We say.
Absolutely, yes.
Way left of center.
Wait, and he keeps going.
He keeps going farther and farther.
Yes. Yeah, he yes. was a Reagan. He was a Reagan Republican at one point. Yes.
But out of the blue, he had no idea what we were going to be talking about in this episode. He wrote, "There's one thing that I can agree with the Republicans, conservatives, and that is we have to send illegals back to their home countries." And I was
shocked.
This is a person that would jump from a building before voting for Donald Trump. Okay.
Yes, so, but don't plant that. No, well, not
put that in there. So, okay. Yeah, that was funny.
That was funny. Yes, it was like my dad like could read our minds or something. Was. It was weird. All right, so let's talk about actual numbers, math. Like, if we were to do this,
right.
Because you're going to get pushback and people who say, "Oh, it's not possible. We can't do it." How do we actually make this happen? Give us some numbers to kind of walk through slowly.
Yeah. So as I was thinking about this show, that's one of the main concerns you have. You can't get rid of 10 million people. That'd be impossible, right? And it's like, well, guess what? Let's look at the math.
Okay.
Let's just say a base of 10 million people.
Okay.
All right. 10 million people.
Illegals.
Illegals. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
10 million illegals. I don't care what nationality you are, what just, ethnicity, whatever.
Illegal.
Illegals.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. In a 4-year administration.
Presidential administration.
And the reason I'm using that is you got to get it done during your administration or else
right,
it could
I
go
agree.
Haywire. You have 1,000 days of actual work.
Okay.
Right? That's 250 days a year for 4 years.
Got it.
1,000 days. So you have 10 million divided by 1,000 days, meaning you have to hold court hearings for 10,000 people a day.
Okay.
And you're thinking, ooh, boy,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. Right?
Okay. That's a lot.
Right.
But however, keep going.
All right. So what we do is set up 200 courtrooms. Now they can be on the border. They can be remotely.
Yeah, I like
right?
that. Right? Yeah.
You can get 200 judges that on a rotating basis that this is all they do for a number of years. You get 200 courtrooms. Each judge can hear 50 cases a day. That's 10,000 people a day.
Okay.
Okay. The numbers work. When somebody is denied, they are given, you have 3 days, you know, to show up and you're going out, or you can be sent out immediately, whatever the policy is going
to
be.
I really think Trump needs to hire you to do this, but I'm not going to live in DC. So
yeah, we can work remotely. So, but yeah. And one of the great benefits of this is it actually frees up all these federal employees
yes.
that have been used for processing people at the border. I mean, they even have our U.S. air marshals. We don't have any air marshals on flights anymore, in case you didn't know.
Yes.
Because Biden took them to these processing centers to process people. And that is the only reason he hires more border agents, is to process more people. So it would free up gazillions of hours.
Can I just say something about that? I am kind of grateful that there are not any air marshals, because I had an issue with a plane and trying to get on after the doors were shut. And
you should have been arrested. Yeah.
If an air marshal, I mean, I didn't have drugs or anything like that, but if an air marshal had been on that flight, yeah, I might have been arrested. But there was no air marshal.
You might have been questioned.
I would have definitely have been questioned because they, you know, I just want to say JetBridge was open They zipped my little, whatever you call it, the ticket on my phone, like zinged it, said welcome. And then I ran down and the doors were shut and I had a tiny meltdown. And basically they couldn't take off till they opened the doors for me. And they did. So it worked. So yes. Yeah.
Well, congratulations for that.
Yeah. Yes. And now on this last point you have, and build the fucking wall, right?
Amen.
Just do it.
Why? Okay. Remember, walls don't work. Yeah, right. Except when, you put them around the Capitol and, things like that. Just remember, our wall is to keep people out, not to keep people in. That's a free society.
Good fences make good neighbors.
They do. High fences make good neighbors. Absolutely.
High fences. Yeah, I think it's good fences.
Or high fences. Oh. That's okay. Yes. But let's look at some more numbers.
Okay.
What is it going to cost to build a wall across the southern border? When it was originally started, yes, they were talking about 20 to 25 billion. I'm saying it costs 30 billion.
Sure.
A drop in the bucket for our multi-trillion dollar budget every year. So, yes.
But also comparing to the cost of illegals, can you give us that?
Well, yeah. I mean, so what are the costs that illegals are costing us as a society? And we are looking at about $500 billion. For these people, because of all the social services that they're using up, we're talking, healthcare,
free healthcare,
education. Yes. Do you know what this is doing to these school systems where they're having to hire, because most of these people don't speak English, they're having to hire all these translators and
in multiple languages. Oh, yeah, not just Spanish.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting parts was, when we talked earlier about 1954 with Operation Wetback, when Mexico wanted those people back then, it wasn't easy to send money, right? Back home. Nowadays, there's apps right on your phone, absolutely, right? You can send it. So Mexico was losing all of this money from all these Mexicans going north in the 50s.
But now?
Now, in 2023, the remittances sent home from people here in this country are $63 billion.
Okay, I want you to clarify that. Illegals.
Illegals, yes. Illegals sending their money
back home.
Correct.
That could have been part of the U.S. economy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So this is money, they're not paying income taxes. Right? If they are, that means they're using an illegal social security number, right? Yep. Because they're not allowed to be working like that with the social security.
Well, in some
cases,
they might not pay taxes because they don't make them enough money either.
Well, they get paid in cash a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. That's
a major component of it. Yes. So, our $30 billion to build the wall is nothing. It is absolutely nothing. And
so what is it going to take to get this done?
Well, the bottom line is political will. That is the key. I think Donald Trump has the political will.
I think he does too.
To do so. Yeah. And he knows he's going to be a one-term president, yep. One other term president. And to give you a quick example of political will, Javier Milei, the new president of Argentina.
Yeah.
And Trump just met with him the other day, today, I think. But Javier Milei took over Argentina. Was in an absolute mess.
Yeah.
And the first thing he did is they have 23 cabinet level departments. He cut that down to 9. He cut out all the crap.
Good for him.
Right.
Good for him.
He's in his second month in office. By month 2, they are now running a monthly surplus.
That's
so
incredible.
That is political will. And he is taking crap from everybody down there, but he knows what it takes. So political will is what it's going to take to do this. Do you have it?
Do you have it? And if you'd like to hire Edward to be your border czar, he would do a lot better job than Kamala.
Called common sense. It's all it is.
These are some excellent points. They really are.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we might have to detail them more in the show notes. All right, so we do have it this week in Woke.
We do.
Even though this is an evergreen episode, so this might be a few weeks old. You may have heard about it. Tell us, Edward, where do we get this one from?
Well, I hope your head doesn't explode.
No, tell us where we got it from before you tell us the title, please.
This is our good friend Alex Parker over at redstate.com.
Okay, so that's important, so we can tag him.
Absolutely.
Yes, okay, thank you, Alex.
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Headline. College clobbers anti-fatness oppression while the ableist practice of grading gets lipoed.
It's a long but catchy headline.
It is a catchy headline.
All right,
headline.
So tell us what's
going on. The article. For spring 2024, the University of New Mexico, that's in Albuquerque, by the way. By the way, can you spell that? That's a tough one to spell.
Actually, that's one of the few I can.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Should I quiz you?
Albuquerque, I think.
Okay.
Double check.
So in Albuquerque, they are offering a 3-credit course on a societal scourge. The ailment, anti-fatness.
I think I left out a Q. I hate that I did that. But anyway, okay.
I'll let you slide.
Q, okay.
Evidently, the heavy situation is one of social construction.
You just had to throw puns in there, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, okay. A lot of puns in this. I love it.
Okay, so I'm what is this guy. Course called?
Well, it actually, the course reads, Welcome to Introduction to Fat Studies. This course will consider the structural forces that construct fatness as problematic, as diseased, gross, dirty, lazy, gluttonous, and other negative characteristics, thereby reinforcing anti-fatness. Ooh. We will explore the historical development of anti-fatness and its roots in colonialism, and discover how capitalism benefits from anti-fatness.
You are
holding your tongue so well.
I know. Keep going. There's one more line about the course.
This course study will study the impacts anti-fatness has on fat people and people of all sizes, and investigate how anti-fatness intersects with other forms of oppression.
Okay. Before we get into why this is just complete bullshit, talk about the grading portion of it too, and then we'll talk about
the guy writes, the professor at the end writes, you may notice that I am not grading on participation or attendance. I have chosen not to grade participation or attendance because I believe that doing so is ableist. All grading is ableist.
Okay, I'm going to deconstruct that before we get back to this bullshit course. Okay?
Shall we?
All right, so first of all, a college professor not grading on participation or attendance is very common. They grade based on test, on merit, how well they did on exams, quizzes, reports, essays. I was a college TA, and I was actually an adjunct professor. So not grading on participation or attendance, okay, means fucking nothing, all right? And then it sounds like this professor, though, is not grading on anything. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. It says, I have chosen not to grade on participation or attendance. Again, it sounds like you're not grading on anything because participation and attendance doesn't mean anything at the college level. It just doesn't.
Right. But his last line of all grading is ableist.
I can't.
Just for the viewers out there and the listeners, ableism is discrimination against an oppressed group.
Okay. Yeah, and it's a made-up term. It's fucking social
Correct.
Jargon.
So this, all it is basically you fat, obese people. I'm surprised they actually called it fatness, you know, instead of obesity or whatever, because
they wanted to include more people.
I guess.
I think that was the inclusion.
Okay.
Okay. So. Okay, this feeds right into this whole, who is this professor again? Do we have a name of this?
I do not have.
Because I just want to slam them on.
I didn't
want
to give them a shout out.
So. Okay. Yeah. But so that's a good point. Fair point. Okay. So this anti-fatness, if you're going to call it that, is directly linked to the body positivity movement. And as I've said many times, I don't think people need to be all the same shape or sizes or anything. But if you flip this on its head, as you often say, if you turned it to the other and we did an anti-thinness, you know, if we promoted anorexia as healthy, people would lose their fucking minds.
That's a good point.
I know. Yeah. Thank you. It is unhealthy to be fat. It is unhealthy, especially to be obese and morbidly obese. Having an extra few pounds, not necessarily going to hurt you. And again, I'm not saying people need to be all shapes and sizes. My weight has varied by 40 pounds in adulthood. So I've been way too skinny and I've been a little too heavy. But to say that there aren't risk at being overweight is ludicrous. Okay. And we're going to go down the list and then we're going to finish with the one I care about the most. And I can't believe he did this. I told him not to do this because I just lose. I just lose my mind.
Yeah. This is one of your hills to die on. Yeah.
All right. So this is according to the CDC, all causes of death. Okay. So if you are overweight, and again, let's use extremely fat, obese, you have what's called a comorbidity. It makes you, you know, more likely to die earlier. High blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, stroke, gallbladder disease. This is really interesting. Osteoarthritis because of the breakdown of the cartilage and bone within a joint. I know someone I went to high school with who is 3 years younger than me, and she's had both knees replaced. And guess what? She used to be a ballet dancer. It wasn't from ballet. It's because she's obese. Sorry, won't say her name, but sorry, but it's true. Sleep apnea and breathing problems. Low quality of life, mental illness, such as clinical depression, anxiety, and mental disorders, and pain, like in difficulty with your body actually functioning. And the biggest one of all, and the one that I care so much about, is cancer. Obesity is linked, directly linked to 13 different kinds of cancer. Bottom line, that is true. Look it up on the CDC. We're not making it up. We're not fat shaming anyone. All we're saying is it's not healthy. And all of these influencers, these plus size model influencers, and again, I'm not talking about women who back in the day, you know, you would call a size 12 or 14. No, I'm talking about women that, you know, are 80 to 100 pounds overweight. And they are these huge influencers on social media calling you out, Callie Thorpe. You can't say that it's healthy. It is not healthy. Nope. It is absolutely not healthy. Now you, as a 25 something year old right now, your health might be okay. But if you have a doctor who's telling you the truth, they're going to say to you at some point, this is going to be too much for your body. We as humans were never equipped to carry lots of extra weight in our bodies. Never, ever, ever. I can't believe you did this topic.
Well, think back a couple of things. Think back years ago, decades ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, there weren't a lot of obese people because of the amount of work that we actually had to do
to get food. And we ate fresh food.
Yeah. But I mean, we were a farming country, yes, and a lot of things like that where people, they didn't eat high sugars, that sort of things like
yeah,
that.
But, yeah. Well, processed food and corn syrup will kill you.
Yeah. But what I find the most fascinating about this in this particular time, now we're in 2024, we just went through a multi-year pandemic.
Yes, we did.
That besides being elderly, obese was the next biggest determinant of death. And God forbid you were elderly and obese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were
and had you a much higher chance. We're not making that up.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking people that have a much higher propensity to succumb to these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, trust me, I understand if people are out there and they have injuries where, you know, they can't do anything, but you can always obviously control what you eat, that sort of yeah. thing. But there are exceptions and some people are just going to be obese regardless.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
That's not true. You said people can control what they eat. That's one of the problems that's not being addressed yeah. is that we have a food addiction problem. There are people yeah. addicted to food the way there are people addicted to coffee, to alcohol, to cigarettes, to drugs. But we don't look at food as overeating as an addiction because we do need food to survive. The bottom line is you don't need that much food. Okay. You don't yeah. need that much food. And if you're turning to food, and I think, you know, there are people that will be very honest about this. If you're turning to food to fill some sort of emotional void or to conquer sadness, or it's called emotional eating for a reason. You're not eating because you're hungry or because your body needs the food in that moment. You're eating to get away, you know, to sort of, you know, run away from whatever it is that's making you sad or unhappy or causing anxiety. And let's, you know, be honest, the reality show, what's it called? The 600-pound...
Oh, 600-pound life.
600-pound right. life that we used to watch, but just can't anymore. Dr. Now Nazardian?
Yes.
Yeah. one of the things that he always does, and I really praise him for it, is he's very straightforward with people. It's like he'll just say, you're lying to me. You're not eating 1,200 calories a day. It's clear you're not.
You gain 40 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing is he always makes sure that that these patients and these are typically 500-600 pounds and up. So morbidly obese. He always makes sure they get therapy. And every single time there has been some kind of physical or sexual abuse in their childhood. Yeah. And it's so devastating. But I mean, people are turning to food as a coping mechanism.
Yeah. Well, I think those are obviously extreme examples, you know, with that. But a lot of people now are just, and you know, we live here in the South, the dietary
everything's issues cooked here. In butter and lard.
Yeah, it is. And people have a sugar addiction.
Yes. Where, oh, absolutely.
You know, Lord forbid you take away a Mountain Dew.
Yes. You know, I know. Yeah. I know. So. And, but I just, like I said, this upsets me so much. And I have been called out on this on LinkedIn. I've been called terrible names for speaking up about this, but my weight has fluctuated by 40 pounds and I am not a big person. So like I said, I've been on extreme ends of this. You know, I've been on the end where, you know, someone called me a Holocaust survivor because I was so skinny and that was due to long COVID. And then I've been on the other end of it when I was younger, where, you know, I had many people ask how far along I was or how pregnant I was, and I was not pregnant. And so I've been on that extreme end of it too. And so I know what it's like. And being too heavy and being too thin, neither one is healthy.
And I think the bottom line is stop, especially these pharmaceutical companies,
yes,
from celebrating obesity.
Oh,
and they are. So please stop.
They are.
It does nobody any good.
Yes. Ozempic, you know, I'm just going to take Ozempic and I'll be healthy and everything will be great. No. All right.
End of rant.
Yes. God, please.
That was a fun one.
I begged him, man. I begged him. Please don't put to be.
It's like a red handkerchief in front of a bull.
It really is on this issue. It is. It is because I care so much about, and I work with cancer patients, and it really saddens me. I've had 6 family members die from 5 different kinds of cancer. And when it's so clear, the link between obesity and 13 different kinds of cancer, certainly not all cancers, but 13 big ones. And that tells me, guess what? That's highly preventable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Thank you for joining us today in this pre-recorded episode that we did just for you. Please follow us live on social media platforms. We are live on most Sundays when we're not out of town like today at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. So, and when we stream live, it's on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, formerly known as Twitter, and Facebook. And please, if you're on Rumble, start following our channel. We're definitely getting some YouTube subscribers, but also on Rumble, please. And if you're listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, Monday morning, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're available, wherever you're listening to the podcast right now. And learn more and do all these things on our website, myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show.
So my question.
Oh, God.
Before we go.
Oh, God.
How long do we have to keep saying X, formerly known as Twitter? I mean, not we, people in general.
I think until they change. Oh, he did finally change the bird to the X. He did finally change that. I don't know, because people still call it tweets.
Yeah.
And tweeting.
So. Okay. Just curious. Anybody knows, let me know.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
That was it.
That's it.
All right. Thanks. Bye.